You're listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, if you've been listening to the news, it's been wall-to-wall Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey's problem with the Fort Lee closure of those lanes several months ago in September of last year for 4 days, and the fact that apparently his staff, at least if we believe an email that someone wrote to someone in the Port of Authority that was a political, worked in the Port of Authority, saying time to close some lanes on the George Washington Bridge. For those of that most Texans are probably not familiar with the fact that, well, there is a George Washington Bridge. It connects Manhattan with New Jersey, and the town on the other side is Fort Lee. And in September, four of the access lanes to this bridge, three of them were closed, and at least the apparent closure was due, again, if you believe the email from a staff member saying time for, and I really need to quote the exact words, and let me see if I have them. No, I don't. But what has been alleged, and it was a news story in the paper, that his deputy chief of staff, a lady named Bridget Ann Kelly, sent a very, very brief email message to someone in the Port of Authority that was appointed by an appointee or hired by an appointee that Governor Christie appointed to the Port of Authority. And what happened today is at a very long press conference, lasted over 107 minutes, which is a long press conference, he fired his deputy chief of staff, as well as accepted the resignation of the gentleman that he appointed to the Port of Authority as a direct result of the disclosure of this email. Now, I don't know if, you know, anyone could send an email in my name to someone and then produce it and say I sent it, and it could be a forgery. I'm not saying it's a forgery. I think it's probably true. But just reading the email, it was like one sentence. It was a very short sentence, and the reply was, got it. I don't think that's enough evidence, quite frankly. Now, I believe the governor confronted the person and probably has more information than just was in that email. But he's come to the conclusion, as is many of the people in New Jersey, as well as I, that probably, at least allegedly, as a direct result of his deputy chief of staff sending that email, and the reply got back that we did have a revenge. And why Fort Lee? A little more background. You'll hear it in the news, and I'm just giving you a summary here. I'm not going to get into detail about it, other than I'm going to use this as an illustration. The mayor of Fort Lee did not endorse Governor Christie when he was running for re-election for a second term in New Jersey. And this mayor is a Democrat, not surprisingly. And it's perceived by many Democrats, as well as people that read the news article, and as a result of all the publicity this has gotten, that this was political payback. Call it revenge, call it what you want. It was really a stupid thing to do. That's the one thing I will agree with Governor Christie. You know, you're responsible for your staff. You need to know what your staff is doing. I don't agree. You know, one thing I do not agree with is when, whether it's the President of the United States, a governor or a general says, I don't know. When he repeatedly says, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. If you're a leader, especially if you're an elected official, you were voted in to know what your staff is doing. And the way you do that is to make sure, first of all, you hire people that are responsible and intelligent. I think this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And the fact that at least two or three people were involved, a minimum of at least three people were involved, is mind-boggling. And two of them, you know, one was on a staff, one was appointed by him, and apparently there's more than these two people that knew of it and didn't inform the governor, because let's face it, the governor does not want to know, because once he knows, he has nothing. The only thing he can do at that point is fire those people. It's called deniability. And I frankly think I'm right on the fence on this. Is Governor Christie lying? Probably, but we'll never know it. We'll never know it. Because usually, here's the thing. I've worked in any organization, and the top person sets the tone. The top person sets the tone. And if his staff thought this was acceptable behavior, where did they get that impression? Where did they get that impression from? You know, Governor Christie said, I'm not a liar. Excuse me, I'm not a bully. He didn't say I'm not a liar. He said, I'm not a bully. Echoes of Richard Nixon, I'm not a thief. I reserve judgment. I don't know if he's a liar or not. I don't know if he's a bully or not. But this will damage his chances for running for president. Let me say this. I lived in New Jersey for a couple of years. I actually graduated from a high school in New Jersey. I have a sense of what New Jersey politics are about. I never was a fan of Governor Christie because I'm a classical liberal or a libertarian. Some put libertarians in the conservative or on the right white wing. I don't think that's correct, but be that as it may. So I hope he would not run, and if he ran, he would not get the nomination for the Republican on the Republican ticket in 2016. You know, he might be impressing people from New Jersey, but he doesn't impress me. He didn't take the lead in trying to defeat Obamacare. Quite the contrary. And I do believe that he engaged in some kind of payback when he didn't get the vice president nomination on the Romney ticket, when a few weeks before the election in 2012, he invited or accepted the fact that the President of the United States and him would walk along a boardwalk and beach in New Jersey. Notice that Mayor Bloomberg did not want the president to come to New York City. He said he would get in the way, and I think that's true. Neither did Governor Cuomo. But when the president made the call, Governor Christie said, come on down, and embraced and hugged President Obama. Great photo op for both of them. And a lot of Republicans see that and want no part of him. Now, I'm well aware the Republican establishment, mainly what we call today RINO, Republican in name only, the liberal Republicans. When I was growing up, they were called Rockefeller Republicans, referring to Nelson Rockefeller, who was governor, Republican governor of New York for many years. You see, the conservative wing of the Republican Party has always had a fight against the liberal wing, whether it was Rockefeller Republicans or Gerald Ford Republicans, in the sense that Ronald Reagan had a fight to get the nomination of the Republican Party. He had a fight both Gerald Ford and George Bush Sr. And he won by landslide victories, both in 1980 and 1984. I don't see Governor Christie as a Ronald Reagan. I do see him very much as like a Jerry Ford or Bob Dole or Mitt Romney. He's left to center. He can talk tough, but when push comes to shove, what you're looking at is a progressive, big interventionist government statist. So I think it's ridiculous that the news media, this is all over radio, in the news, it's all over the television, it's all over CNN, all the major networks, with the exception of Fox, and they're even covering it. And why are they doing it? They want to knock out Governor Christie. That's why they're doing it. Because they think he has a fairly good chance to get the Republican nomination in 2016 and could defeat former Senator and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Now, frankly, like I said, I hope that Christie does not get the Republican nomination. But a large percentage of the Republican establishment still view him as a leading contender. Now, what's going to happen is the big money people are going to hold on their money a little longer to see is Governor Chris Christie still viable as a candidate. I hope he isn't. I frankly don't care for the gentleman, because what we need is leadership that really reflects limited government, which means cutting spending, not expanding the size of the federal government. It means repealing Obamacare. And everything I see, Governor Christie is not stopping that. He's going along with the establishment view, which is predominantly progressive or interventionist in the Republican Party. He's part of the establishment. The only thing the political establishment of the Republican Party needs to do, and they don't need to do it right away, is to select a viable candidate for president in 2016. And I think Governor Chris Christie would be a disaster. It'd be a repeat of the Romney as well as the Robert Dole candidacies. What we need is a strong leader, communicator of conservative and libertarian principles as the candidate, because that is proven by the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980 and 1984 to be a winning combination. Both Dole, McCain, and Romney, it's going to be repeat, because this middle-of-the-road centrist reaching across the aisle attitude is not a winning formula. And why do I say that? And this goes to was going to be my lead story. That was a story yesterday. Gallup came out with a poll and announced record high number of Americans now consider themselves to be independent. They want nothing to do with the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party. That's 42%. Actually, the last quarter of this year, it was up to 46%. And that compares with 35% saying that they're Democrats and 25% Republican. See, my prediction is this. Over this year, that 35% could very well go below 30 for the Democratic Party. Why Obamacare? And I say that because you have 155 million Americans have their insurance coverage or their health insurance coverage through their employer, their group plans with their employer. And in terms of number of plans, in terms of number of people, over 100 million of those 155 million are plans with small businesses, namely businesses with less than 50 employees. And I think it's probably upwards of 120 million. No one really knows the exact number. But every month, starting in this month and next month, continuing throughout the year, roughly 10 million people, plus or minus maybe a million, are gonna have meetings with the business owner, where he's going to inform them that they have a new health insurance plan. And it's more expensive as a direct result of Obamacare, or if you prefer, the Health Care Act or the Patient Protection and Health Care Act, the full title of the law that put in place what shorthand is referred to as Obamacare, that had two major impacts. It required all plans to have a number of benefits that resulted in a dramatic increase, a significant increase to the cost of your health insurance, point one. And point two, they had to accept insurance companies could not ask health questions. Now, you got to keep in mind, with group plans, employer-type plans, where the employer or business, it could be a business, it could be a charity, whatever type of organization it is, it goes out to insurance companies, and typically we'll compete it and tell the broker or the insurance agents, here's what you're interested in terms of a deductible, co-payments, and lifetime out-of-pocket. Now, what's different this year is their existing health insurance plans no longer, with few exceptions, there are some, but the overwhelming majority of plans do not qualify under the Health Care Act. In other words, these businesses have to purchase health insurance that meet the Obamacare law, and that makes them more expensive. And it also means they're going to have higher deductibles and higher out-of-pockets, significantly higher deductibles and significantly out-of-pocket. And it's going to be more expensive to buy. So what's going to happen is the employer is first going to have to make a decision. Do I continue paying for it? I think the majority of them will, and I mean by that 80 to 90% will probably say, okay, we will continue to pay for it and provide you with health insurance. I think some of those will say, because of the increase, you're going to have to pay either a dollar figure or a percent of those premiums. So what's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of people not happy at that because they're going to have higher deductibles, higher payments that they have to make before it's 100% paid by the insurance company, and they might have to even pay a share of the increased premiums. And at percentage, I would say anywhere from 10 to 20%. Again, I have no idea how this will actually play out, but small employers that are having really a rough time in this rather slow growth, stagnating economy will simply say, listen, we no longer can provide health insurance. And remember, this is small businesses under 50. They're not required to provide health insurance, and many of them. And this will probably involve many millions of people. 5, 10, 15, 20 million would not surprise me. Depends on what percentage say, hey, we can't do it anymore. And then that forces those individuals to go on the health exchange, and then they're going to find the same situation. They're going to have to pay all of it. Now, I'm reviewing that for the simple reason, I think this is going to be a reason why many voters, many of them Democratic voters, not just Republicans and independents, don't want anything to do with the Democratic Party and will vote out of office representatives and senators on the Democratic ticket. So what you're going to see this year is a drop of the percentage of people that identify themselves as affiliated, their political affiliation is the Democratic Party. Now, what I think this is leading up to, and it might not be this year, it might take 10 years or 20 years, but as more and more people say, I don't want to have anything to do with either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And what that typically will mean is they will stay home, they will not vote, or to the extent they do vote, they will vote for example, Tea Party candidates or independent candidates or libertarian candidates that are not associated or affiliated with either the Republican or Democratic Party. So I don't think the independent affiliation has peaked. I think that trend will continue, and it's a noticeable trend. Both parties are aware of this. I think both parties are scared of it, and they should be scared, because why is this happening? The perception out there is that the so-called ruling elite, the establishment, the political establishment of both the Democratic and the Republican Party are ignoring the will of the American people. We have an elite that says, we know best. We're going to decide, for example, that you have to buy one of these metallic health insurance plans that we've designed for you. That's an infringement upon my liberty and freedom. That's an attack on consumer sovereignty. It is unprecedented. There is going to be a major backlash against this. The Democratic Party is going to take a big hit in the next election as a direct result of forcing the American people into these Obamacare plans. If you're a Democratic running for either a House seat or a Senate seat, You have major problems because you voted for Obamacare. You voted for this monstrosity. Now, the people on welfare, the people that now qualify for Medicaid, to the extent that they vote, they'll vote for Democrats. The problem is, who are we talking about? We're talking about the poor and the young. They don't have money, and they frankly don't pay much attention to politics. But some of those people will definitely vote for the Democrats. But they're in a distinct minority. The people that work every day, the producers, not the moochers, the producers, are irate about Obamacare. The only ones, frankly, that are for it are primarily those that are either getting subsidies or now qualify for Obamacare as a direct result of expanding the level in terms of the poverty level from 100% to 135% or 138%, however you want to calculate it, and now qualify for Medicaid. Now, as long as you're not sick, you might think you got something. But you ever get sick, and the only thing you don't have an insurance plan, you have Medicaid. That Medicaid is health insurance. Actually, it's not even health insurance. It's Medicare. It's Medicaid. It enables you to go to a doctor if you can find a doctor that will accept it. And most doctors don't, and very few, if any, specialists do. And the reason why is the reimbursement rate is so low that the doctors say, if the only way you can pay me is Medicaid, sorry, you can't get an appointment here. We take either cash or you better have a good insurance policy, one of these Obama metal plans. And even under those, because the deductibles are so high, you better be able to pay the deductibles. We're talking like for an individual on these either the bronze or the silver plans, typically $3,000 to $3,500. That's the deductible. In other words, you have to pay that first. So even though there's more benefits, and I'll be the first one to say, they piled on a lot of benefits. The problem is, take my situation. I don't need maternity care. I don't need pediatric care. I'm not going to get pregnant. I don't have kids. I'm a male. But those benefits are included. I don't do drugs or alcohol, so I don't need counseling to deal with those problems. I don't have mental problems. I don't need psychiatric care. Before Obamacare, you could go out and buy a health insurance plan and tailor it to your situation. That's what I mean by consumer sovereignty. You have a choice of what meets your needs and wants and your income, and you can go and buy it, just like a car. You have a broad range of options in terms of a broad range of prices, a broad range of types of cars, styles of cars, and depending on your budget, your preferences, your needs and wants, you buy the car that makes sense for you. And for people that don't have any money, they either have to walk or use public transportation, which is sort of what Medicaid is. Because if you're unfortunate that you don't make enough money, that's what you're relying on, and you're going to have to hunt for a doctor. And if you have a serious illness that requires the treatment by a specialist, you're going to really be out of luck because it's hard to find specialists that will take Medicaid patients. And now we have a lot more. It was a bad situation prior to the expansion of Medicaid. So for all these reasons, the Democratic Party percentage in terms of affiliation, I think, will continue to drop. Both parties are dropping. The Republican Party is in trouble because they're at 25%, and the Democrats are at 35%. Now, you can, what typically is done, there are also people that lean towards one party to the or the other. But what I'm leading up to is this, and I would say the 50% mark is probably a good indicator of when this probably will happen. And we're not far from it. That's why I'm making this point. I'm an independent. I will never vote for any Democratic candidate, period. I've ruled that party out.
they have gone, they are for big interventionist government, both in the U.S. economy and abroad. They're the problem. They want more spending, more taxes, more debts, and more printing of the money. That's all they're about. No attempt really to balance the budget other than increase taxes terrifically. They simply do not understand that jobs are created in the private sector, mainly by small to mid-sized businesses, new small and mid-sized businesses. So if you want a good job, if you're looking for a job, that's where you go. Look, it's not working for the government. Yeah, there's always going to be government jobs, but it's the private sector that creates wealth, creates income, and creates jobs. And to do that, you need an environment that encourages the formation of new businesses. You also need an economic environment that encourages capital formation or the investment in the business to expand it and grow. That's what we need. We don't have that in Washington, D.C. anymore. Definitely not from the Democratic Party that's predominated by progressives or big interventionist government status. They think that the answer to balancing the budget is higher taxes. Ladies and gentlemen, that means more taxes on the middle class. We're not talking about the rich. There are not enough rich people. And there are many, many people that most people would consider rich. The problem is there's not enough of them. So if you truly want to balance the budget without cutting spending, you're going to tax people that are making $50,000 or $100,000 a year. What do you think Obamacare is? It's just another tax. And the suckers, the biggest suckers that bought into Obamacare are the young people. Because what are the young people having to do? Pay significantly more money for a health insurance plan. And now they're required by law, the so-called mandate. And if they don't pay for it, they have to pay a penalty. That goes up and up and up. It starts out very low, but it'll go up, up, and up. And see, the young people usually do not use the services of healthcare providers. It's only when they get older, in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, that they have more and more medical problems. It could be cancer. It could be heart disease. It could be strokes, diabetes, obesity. That causes a number of problems. So it's sicker and older people that are really going to be subsidized by young people that have been forced to buy these plans. That's what it's all about. And eventually the young people today are waking up to that. A little late and a little slow, but they're waking up to that. So for all those reasons, the Democratic Party is going to have a significant fall in the percentage that are affiliated with it. It's going to take time. And I don't think the Republican parties are going to be the beneficiaries. I think more and more are going to become independents. And ultimately what you're going to see, and I'm not making a prediction as to when, I don't know when, but I would say sometime in the next 10 to 20 years, it could happen this year, it could happen 5 years from now, 10, 15, 20. But there is going to be a tipping point or critical mass where independents are over 50%. And there will be individuals with a political philosophy, such as the Tea Party movement, the conservative movement, libertarians, will form a new third party. You see, there are over a dozen, really there are over two dozen political parties in the United States, but it's the Democratic and the Republican Party that more or less have a lock on it. It's a duopoly. You only have two parties. And it makes it difficult for a new third party to really break in and replace one of the other parties. So it's not going to be easy. It's going to take money. It's going to take lawyers. It's going to take really people of principle and activists to form a new party and replace either the Democrat, Republican, or both parties. Because right now, if you add 25 and 35%, you're at 60%. But what's going to happen is when the independents are over 50%, and I think that could happen within 2 to 4 years, probably I wouldn't be surprised if it happened by the 2016 election. And there's a message there. If both parties continue to ignore the will and desires of the American people, for example, in the health insurance area, in the immigration area, in the government spending area, and really also in the tax area, there is a golden opportunity for individuals, like-minded individuals, to form a new political party and run against them and win. It's already happening today when Tea Party members, noting they don't have the money or the organization or the critical mass necessary to form a third party, decide to run in the Republican Party as a challenger to incumbents, either a Democrat or a Republican incumbents. And you're going to see more and more of that. And I say it's already happening. What do you think Texas Senator Ted Cruz? Do you think the Republican establishment in either Texas and Washington, D.C. supported Ted Cruz? No, they did not. And the same thing for Rand Paul in Kentucky, maybe to a lesser extent. And the same thing for Mike Lee in Utah. Ladies and gentlemen, that is spreading as I speak. And I'm aware that the Republican establishment in Washington, D.C. is going to piecemeal pass laws that will give legal status to work in the United States to the 20 to 30 or 40 million illegal aliens that are working here. Notice I didn't say 11 or 12 million because that's a bogus number. That's dramatically understated. It is somewhere, I don't know what the number is, but I'll tell you this. It's north of 30 million. Somewhere between 30 and 40 million or higher. And if you give legal status, and that's what they're going for, and the Republican Party wants to give the Republican establishment wants to give illegal aliens that are here legal status. Totally against it. I'm for the rule of law and law and order, which means the enforcement of federal immigration law, and that means the deportation of anyone that's entered the United States here illegally. It's a crime, and they're committing a crime by staying here, they're committing a crime by getting documents so they can work here, and they're committing a crime every day they're working here. And who does that hurt? It hurts American citizens. We have over 25 million Americans that are looking for a full-time job. More than half of those are not working, and those that are working at part-time jobs with limited hours and limited or no benefits. That's who's being hurt by the fact that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is actively funding and trying to defeat Tea Party members that are trying to win in primaries to go against incumbents. The establishment is trying and to some extent succeeding to suppress the will of the American people in the Republican Party. The American people don't support amnesty or citizenship for illegal aliens, nor do they support legal status. And it doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, Republican, liberal, progressive, conservative, libertarian. There have been survey after survey after survey where anywhere from 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4, in some cases 4 out of 5 of those surveys say, while we support legal immigration, we do not support illegal immigration, which means we don't support amnesty, we don't support citizenship, nor do we support giving them legal status. And that's why both the Democratic Party and Republican Party are going to be losing more and more people that normally would have been voting either Democrat or Republican. That's why this is just one issue where the Republicans, as well as the Democrats, are losing their base. And what I'm saying, as many more people are saying, plague on both houses. I don't want either of them. Governor Christie is just one example of them. So is John Boehner, the Speaker of the House. And he's leading this charge. And what they're waiting for, their filing dates, if you want to run in primaries to contest and run in a primary, let's say for a House representative seat or a Senate seat. They're waiting to those dates to pass, and why they're waiting, they don't want to have any votes until that happens on so-called immigration or piecemeal immigration reform. After the dates are passed, then they'll take votes on it. So Obama and John Boehner, a Republican, are trying to push this through. And the Republicans are doing it for the money. The Democrats are doing it for the votes. And frankly, the Republican Party is committing political suicide if they do it. They'll go from 25% to 20% real quick if they don't wake up. I'm going to have to cut it short today. I really have a couple of minutes. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.